From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone. This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting this week from the Radio People Studios in Monroe, Louisiana. My goodness, we've had a busy week. I just literally got back from the city of Denver, Colorado, where, yes, I was attending the Democratic National Convention. This was a historic event indeed. On the 45th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s landmark I Have a Dream speech, the Democratic Party has nominated the first African-American candidate for the high office. The convention was also historic in another sense. A record number of religious leaders were on hand this past week in Denver, invited to share their take on the many moral issues of today, issues like poverty and health care, the environment and education. And I have a special perspective on those proceedings. I was asked by the Obama campaign to sit down in one of these faith forums and express my own concerns about the faith-based initiative and how the campaigns engage religious congregations. On today's program, I'll share my impressions of the convention, and we'll hear from other faith leaders and convention goers about the role faith actually played in this year's party gathering. Shortly, a conversation with our friend and regular State of Belief contributor Greg LaBelle, a man with whom I've been speaking throughout the election cycle and whose political predictions I happily describe as more right than wrong. That's all to come, but first, I was joined at the Democratic Convention by my colleague and good friend, Donna Redwing, a longtime political activist, frankly, at one time called by the religious right the most dangerous woman in America, and an advisor to Interfaith Alliance. Donna patrolled the floor for us, and at the Democratic Convention, she acted as our intrepid reporter. Now, she's here now to share what she saw and what she heard at the many faith caucuses and speeches that she attended. Donna, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you, Welton.
Well, we got to start with the biggest news first, and I think that would have to be Obama's acceptance speech. You were there in that packed stadium. Set the scene for our listeners.
There were 84,000 people, and some had spent the night camped out in front of the stadium. Others had walked in lines, Welton. They walked for 4 hours from the downtown. They walked along the Platte River. They walked over bridges and into the grounds. And by the time Obama took the stage, they had danced to Stevie Wonder and Sheryl Crow and John Legend. They had heard people like Al Gore and Dick Durbin. Some people actually described it as the Obama-palooza. So it had almost a carnival atmosphere. And then he took the stage, and it was a brilliant, brilliant speech.
I want you to talk about how you feel personally about having heard him speak.
Well, he said that this was not the time for small plans, that this was that America was better than that, and we were better than that. And so being in this crowd of people listening to him talk not only about the problems but the solutions. Some people never sat down, Welton. Hmm. They stood, they jumped up and down, they hugged each other. To be in that crowd and to feel like you were a part of something that was going to change the world, that's what it felt like. And, you know, people will say he was presidential, he was tough, he was this or that. But in that crowd, I think we felt not only that he was talking to us, mm-hmm. but that he was one of us.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk shortly about what was said by the many faith leaders in the individual faith caucuses at the convention. But I want to talk a little bit about how faith, or at least talk about faith, showed up in some of the big speeches other than Senator Obama's. Now, you know that we here at State of Belief were on the lookout for how party leaders would represent their faith rhetorically at the convention. And you worry, as do I, about anyone running for office and using religious language as a divisive political tool. I didn't see a lot of that happening. What did you see?
I did not see a lot of faith talk last night. I think what we heard were people speaking of their faith and how it guided them personally. I didn't see people cross the line. As you know, David Saperstein, he offered the invocation, and it hit all the right notes. It was beautiful. It was inclusive. I was a little nervous when Joel Hunter mm-hmm. Took to the stage, former Christian Coalition president. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what he was going to do in his benediction.
And Donna, let me just say, listeners to State of Belief know Joel because I've had him on several times.
Okay.
Tell them, though, in case they missed it, tell them what he did.
Okay, Joel Hunter took to the stage. He offered a brief benediction, and then he asked people to close the benediction with him. And I think what he said was, in the way your faith tradition would close the prayer. Mm-hmm. And what we heard this cacophony of voices and languages, different languages. And I looked around, and there were different physical gestures. Some people did the sign of the cross. Some people had their hands in prayer. Some people were bowing at the waist, or they had their arms outstretched. It was perfect. Mm. And when it was over, there was this moment of silence, and then everybody started to laugh and smile. It was stunning. As I was walking out, Welton, I asked an older lady, I said, "How did you feel about that?" And she said, "It should have been like Babel, but you know what? We all understood each other."
Mm, boy.
Yeah, it was powerful.
Well, Donna, the list of speakers was a veritable who's who of the Democratic Party, and I'm talking now not just about that one evening. Of course, you had the Clintons deliver great speeches. Joe Biden delivered a great speech. Also, Michelle Obama. This is a hard question, but which for you made the biggest impact?
Ted Kennedy.
Hmm.
And for two reasons. One, as everybody is saying, the lion is back. He was there with great force and great passion. It was classic Ted Kennedy. But it was also about passing the baton.
Mm-hmm.
Ted represents, you know, some of the best of where we've been. And I think what he did was pass the baton mm-hmm. to Barack Obama.
Hmm. I'm Welton Gaddy. I'm speaking with Donna Redwing of the Interfaith Alliance here on State of Belief. We're talking today about the Democratic Convention. Now, look, we got to take a break. Don't you all go anywhere. There's a lot more of this conversation to come, and we're going to tell you some stuff you need to know. Bow, 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 bow. Welcome back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. On today's program, the Democratic National Convention and the role that faith played in Denver. I'm talking with Donna Redwing of the Interfaith Alliance, who was in attendance at the convention, as was I. Donna, now, at this convention, the Democrats did something new. The convention organizers invited many religious leaders to participate in what they call faith caucuses. These were conversations moderated by members of different faith communities who shared their faith perspectives on some of today's most important issues, like immigration and education, even abortion, and, of course, poverty. You had the chance to attend far more of these than I did, but tell us what you saw happening there.
First, I have to say, early in the week, the faith caucuses were very well attended, sometimes 400 to 500 people in the room, standing room only. And I think that that tells us that Democrats really do want to engage on some level. The caucuses offered up amazing people from a diversity of faiths. And what I found interesting was, even though there were great disagreements around issues, they were civil, they were interesting, they were informative. I think this was a great attempt for the first time that they did this, but I think that they have to be much more inclusive and they have to allow for real dialogue.
And Don, I know you had the opportunity to speak with Reverend Chuck Curry, an activist. Chuck is also a minister for the United Church of Christ in Portland. As a matter of fact, I think you talked to him while I was speaking at the Faith Forum, but I'm not going to mention that. I'd like to play just a little bit of your conversation with Chuck. Listen with me, if you will.
We're here today at the Democratic National Convention, and I'm with one of my heroes, Chuck Curry. I have a few questions for you. Does the Democratic Party's discussion of faith offer an exclusive voice for religious freedom that respects both believers of all faiths and non-believers?
You know, I have appreciated so much that you haven't heard only Christian voices here, but there have been Muslim and Buddhist and Jewish voices. And I appreciated also that Howard Dean, the Democratic Party chairman who was here today, spoke about the need for this party to include everyone, whether they be a person of faith or not. And I think that's the way for any political party to go.
Okay, Chuck, tell us, what do you think about what you've heard or what you haven't heard from the podium about faith?
There have been moments where I've been entirely comfortable and cheering, and moments where I have kind of bit my lip and said, what are they doing here? But that's fine. I mean, that's what a political party ought to be. It ought to be a big tent where people are mature enough to disagree with each other. And I'll give you an example. I am a strongly pro-choice person from a pro-choice church, and there have been people here who disagree with me on that issue. And those moments have not been particularly comfortable to hear from the podium, but I can respect that people have differences with me. That's what the pro-choice movement is all about in the end. And so, fine, let them speak, but I want to win that battle in Congress.
What do you think about the Democratic National Convention opening with a religious service?
I think it's appropriate and fine. Where I draw the line is I believe that the Democratic Party should not promote any particular faith. The American government, of course, should not promote any one faith, but it should be open to people of faith who are concerned about the moral issues of our day. And so I'm concerned about civil rights. I'm concerned about homelessness. I'm concerned about the environment. Those are moral issues. Those are religious issues. And it's appropriate for political parties to talk about those. I would hope that both of them do the same.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Now, Donna, Reverend Curry said that he thought the Democrats were successful in talking about faith, including faith leaders, and even holding an interfaith gathering at the opening of the convention without seeming like the party was endorsing one particular faith. I'm curious, do you agree with that assessment?
Well, let's go back to the very first event of the Democratic National Convention. It was the interfaith gathering. Many of the people that I spoke to loved the service. They loved it. I stopped maybe 24 people and asked them about it, and they all wanted more. But, you know, I think we have to ask, was there a place for humanists, atheists and agnostics there? Not really. And, you know, were the faiths outside of the Abrahamic traditions included? I think the answer is barely. Some people had a hard time with the overwhelming number of Christian songs. And while they were beautiful, you know, they were all Christian, and there was a lot of it.
Hmm.
But even though, you know, I was looking for those those issues around, you know, faith and politics,
mm-hmm.
I have to say the service that I experienced was beautiful and moving. And I think that the people who put it together, I think the DNC tried to do what was right and tried to do what was inclusive. And I think that they just have to do a better job next time.
You and I have been in a context that was different than other contexts of political conventions. Lots of talk about faith at the convention. Tell me, were there any moments, or was there one moment that gave you pause, that made you say, I wish they hadn't done that, that's just sheer politics?
There were a couple of times that disturbed me, and one was when Leah Daughtry, who is the CEO of the convention, stood in front of one of the Faith in Action panels and said that for her, the intersection, you know, of mm-hmm. faith and politics was just right.
Hmm.
And I think that there are ways to talk about your faith informing your politics. But to be at such a high level in the Democratic Party and to confirm that you cannot separate your faith from your politics, That disturbed me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Donna, this got to be quick. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being bad, 10 being they really got it right, how did the Democrats do with handling the issues of faith in a political context?
I would give them a 7.5.
Someday when we have a lot of time, I'm going to find out what the 0.5 was. Donna Redwing is the Senior Advisor for Program and Development at the Interfaith Alliance, our newly minted radio reporter, and a great resource at the Democratic Convention. Donna, again, thank you so much for your hard work over the last couple of days.
And Welton, thank you so much.
I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio. And while I was at the Democratic Convention this past week, I was lucky to be able to grab a couple of minutes to catch up with State of Belief's own political analyst. Well, at least that's what I like to call him, Greg LaBelle. Our conversation is coming up next. Stay with us, please.
Walk along the river, sweet love, it just keep on flowing.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. On today's program, a look at what was said and wasn't said at this year's Democratic National Convention, and the role that faith played in all of the festivities. I was fortunate, while patrolling the convention floor, to see a very familiar face, my good friend and a regular here on State of Belief, political expert, college professor, and a veteran of past presidential campaigns, Gregory LaBelle. Give a listen now to our conversation.
Well, I'm joined now by someone that all of you know and someone that we've had a lot of fun with all of this primary campaign, and now as we head down the stretch in the general elections. Greg LaBelle is our good friend. He's had wisdom for us, and as I think actually been right more than he's been wrong in his insights and predictions for us. And he joins me now right here in Denver, Colorado, on the eve of the big speech by Barack Obama, Eve meaning the afternoon before the speech. Greg, welcome back to State of Belief.
Well, as someone who lived here in Denver for a while, several years back, welcome to Denver.
Thank you. What's your general impression of what you've heard, seen, felt, experienced this week?
This has been a very carefully choreographed convention. I think that there were lots of questions about how certain players would conduct themselves, and I think we really have to describe this as a home run. They've done a superb job, I think, of keeping things moving, of keeping on message, and doing what they set out and needed to do.
Prior to this convention convening, I had people tell me that they were getting more press releases from the Democratic National Convention than they had ever received about all kinds of events related to the celebration of faith, the interfaith worship service with which this kicked off last Sunday. And yet I have to say that once you move out of the so-called faith district where the faith forums were held and so forth, I haven't seen much noticeable difference from the platform. Have you?
I think you're right. There has been an effort, and this is an effort that we've seen building over the last several years, I think, to reach out to people, people of faith, or people who are looking for those signs of faith in making political decisions. If I may say so, I think it's unfortunate. I think that what we have begun to do is turn religion in this country and people of faith in this country into just another interest group, and that's unfortunate.
It's interesting. I saw someone this morning who had been talking with a reporter about the emphasis on faith that has supposedly been present this week in a way that it hadn't been in others. And the reporter unfortunately said, well, you know, I've always thought that dealing with faith issues meant dealing with gay marriage and dealing with abortion. And this time it's meant dealing with poverty and dealing with war and peace. Where did that come from? And I said to the person, well, I think it came out of religion. What do you think?
I guess hallelujah to that. I mean, we watched in the last presidential cycle this vastly overblown discussion of values voters, quote unquote. And the argument then was that values voters were people who cared about abortion and homosexuality. And once you got and in opposition too, once you got outside of anything that had to do with gender and sexuality, that was not perceived as being a values issue and not perceived as being an issue that might be faith-based. That's the good news here, because we've begun to see that broaden, and people are beginning to recognize that faith and values issues are broader than just those areas. That they do involve peace and war. They do involve poverty and so on and so forth. And that's a good thing.
Some of the most important issues with religious overtones don't even get recognized by some in the public as religious issues, like the economy, like what happens with health insurance. What are, in your opinion, the issues in this campaign that will likely demonstrate the greatest differences in the values of John McCain and Barack Obama?
I think you've just named two of the most significant ones, those being healthcare and the economy. The interesting question is sort of how these play out. We have seen the right, and we often see this sort of language, that the idea of sort of biblical economic policy and so on and so forth, which personally I have a problem with. But what I think we're seeing in the Democratic Party, in liberals and progressives in general, is an ability not to link public policies to verse, chapter and verse of the Bible, but be able to explain how their religious and moral and ethical values bring them here. I think we saw that in Michelle Obama's speech this week. She didn't talk specifically about, I don't think she mentioned what denomination they grew up in, but clearly this was a speech, which I felt I thought was a remarkable speech. She talked about her values and her family's values. And you can see that anchoring of those values in religion and faith. I think it's there.
Are we going to see the discussion in the general election framed around values or framed in another way?
I think one of the questions is, which John McCain will we see coming out of the convention? Are we going to see the John McCain that we saw in the 2000 presidential campaign, or will we see the John McCain that followed? And there are some real differences there. John McCain is clearly uncomfortable in having these conversations. It's not where he comes from, it seems. But certainly Obama is. I mean, Senator Obama is much more comfortable having these sorts of discussions. So I think it's the Obama people will probably want to continue that, tempering that always with the need to anchor these discussions in kitchen table issues. Yes, I think we will see some of it, but we may not always recognize it for what it is.
Are you ready for the challenge before the two of us to describe this as we go toward Election Day?
I can't wait.
Me either. Thanks, Greg, for being here with us in Denver and giving us a good conversation. We'll have more. Stay tuned.
That was Greg LaBelle, who is heard regularly on State of Belief. Greg is an assistant professor at George Washington University, and he is no stranger to party conventions. Greg LaBelle worked on the presidential campaigns of former U.S. Senator Gary Hart, Vice President Al Gore Jr., and Governor Howard Dean, as well as numerous state, local, and congressional campaigns. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief. Isn't this fun? And on today's show, we're recapping this year's Democratic Convention. Now, for the first time in the party history, the convention opened with an interfaith gathering. The service was designed to showcase the diverse faith traditions that make up the Democratic Party. We were on hand at the event and asked those who attended to tell us their thoughts about what happened there. Here's a sampling of what they had to say.
My name's Rhonda Hubbard. I'm from Denver, Colorado. This is my husband, Darnell Hubbard. And we thought that the service was awesome. Wonderful time for all faiths to come together just to share a common goal and a common mission that humans and everyone is the same and we share the same likeness in one God.
Yes, my name is Chartres Kelly Green, Senatorial District 13, Fort Bend County, Harris County, State of Texas. I think it's just an awesome way, no better way of unifying the Democratic Party is us all coming together as one wonderful beginning.
I'm Bob Geiser. I'm council member of the city and county of Broomfield in Colorado. I thought this was wonderful. I am an ex-minister, and I was very excited to see that they have included a number of religions, and it was very good to see so many people here who are here to start the convention with the service of worship. And the values that I have because of my faith are values that I want to express in my vote. You know, I want a party who supports all people, who actually supports the poor, and a party that tries to cease war.
My name is Jeremy Shaver. I serve as the Director of Outreach and Communications for the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, and I'm a Denver resident and also on staff at a congregation here in Denver. You know, I had mixed views of the time, to be honest with you. I think the one thing that was really a highlight for me was that this venue was an opportunity for really esteemed people of faith and leaders of faith to let us remember that religion can play a positive healing role in our society, and they really helped emphasize some of those shared values that we can come around to work for the common good. But it's important that folks remember that we need to respect all people, whether they choose to worship or not, and that there's no religious test to serve as president of this country.
Again, a very special thank you to Donna Redwing for gathering these voices from the Democratic National Convention. We got to take a short break right now, but when we come back, I want to give you my own reflections of what was said and done in Denver and some predictions for what lies ahead in the Twin Cities. That's up next. Stay with us. We're coming right back. back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. Before we go this week, I've just got to share with you some of my own reflections on this past week's convention. Well, how did Democrats do? What do you think of the way they incorporated faith into their convention? These have been by far the most frequently asked questions given to me over the last several days, and they deserve honest answers. The so-called faith forums in Denver attracted a lot of pre-convention attention, and to their credit, convention planners didn't turn the daily faith gatherings into partisan rallies adorned in religious trappings. To be sure, speakers here and there used these venues to endorse Senator Obama and Senator Biden. However, most of the speakers in these sessions focused on pertinent but sometimes difficult questions about what is appropriate and what is not appropriate regarding religion on the campaign trail or in the White House. And these panelists reflected diversity in their opinions and in their suggestions. So look what happened. The Democrats adopted what I think was a smart strategy that undoubtedly helped their party. Few more references to religion than usual were to be seen or heard among those that attended and moderated these faith forums. Indeed, most delegates who attended only general sessions of the convention likely didn't even notice any increased emphasis on religion on the part of convention leaders. Even when religious language was used in major speeches, it was the vocabulary of a kind of American civil religion more than a listing of denominational doctrines or sectarian values. However, having determined no longer to allow Republicans to claim exclusive rights to an emphasis on religion, Obama-led Democrats provided space, encouragement, and assistance in programming for people wanting a more visible presence for religion in their national convention. And they presented no tirades against people who don't embrace the beliefs of a particular religious tradition, or any religious tradition at all, for that matter. In a sense, everybody got what they wanted. Religion-based discussions were available in special venues for all who sought them, while political discussions, with only a dash of religion in them, resounded from the main stage. Now, if there were an award for best practices on how to speak about religion in a political address, I'd probably give it to Senator Joe Biden. In a non-assuming but very moving manner, the Democrats' nominee for vice president spoke eloquently of how his religious faith strengthened and sustained him in a time of horrific personal trials. But Senator Biden related his personal experience in a very matter-of-fact manner that informed listeners of his identity and values, while not coming close to suggesting, even implicitly, that this was a reason to vote for him or that everybody in the room should follow his example. You know, I hate to tell you this. I must give the Democrats higher marks than I had anticipated would be possible. During this past week, they handled the relationship between religion and politics pretty well. But stay tuned. It's a long, long way until November, and pitfalls are plentiful. That observation provides a great transition to next week and our need to pay attention to the Republican convention. And using our blog, stateofbelief.com, to share our thoughts about it, we want to meet you there again. Once again, let's focus on two issues: the faith-based initiative and the manner in which religion is used for campaigning. Specifically, join me in looking at how Republicans explain, if at all, how faith will impact their political decisions. And I invite you to compare these two conventions. I want to know what your opinions are about them. I must say this. This past Thursday night, Barack Obama delivered one of the most religious speeches I've ever heard, and I can't even remember him using the word religion in the speech. but he talked about issues that religious people ought to care about. And he made proposals that deserve a lot of consideration. Now, my hope is that next week, John McCain will respond with a masterful speech of his own that joins the battle. And we will look closely at Governor Sarah Palin to look at how she, in her past, has integrated or not integrated faith and religious language into her political campaigns. How our nation can benefit from a civil, intense debate on issue after issue that now divides our nation. If these two leaders could take us into their trust, and I'm talking about Barack Obama and John McCain specifically, and if they can enable us to hear and see the distinction between two different perspectives on the present and two different visions of this nation, we will be more informed voters and we will be better for their conversations, and the election will be decided not by hype and fluffy opinions, but by future-altering, carefully examined, rock-solid convictions. Well, that's our show for this week. Remember to share your thoughts about the show by going to stateofbelief.com and clicking on the Contact Us page. We love hearing from you. And as always, we must remind you that State of Belief is produced by Interfaith Alliance Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. And you know what that means. This show is supported by members of Interfaith Alliance. So go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. And while you're there, why don't you think about becoming more than a listener? We'd love to have you as a member of the Interfaith Alliance. Your membership can help keep State of Belief on the air and the discussion going with vigor. Next week, we turn our sights to faith at the Republican Convention. Make sure you tune in. And until then, this week, like always, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.